Hey guys, welcome to episode 133 of the JV Club with my guest Sarah Thayer. Sarah Thayer falls into the category of someone I wish I were. She's marvelous. I want to get some shout outs in there. First of all, I want to thank Nita C for really just managing and helping navigate the JV Club Tumblr page and just generally being awesome. I want to thank Jenny for sending me her sister's book, books, plural, and for also being fantastic. And I want to thank Aaron for his email. I want to ask if he enjoyed his trip to Tucson. And I want to thank for their emails, Brianna, Roberto, Kay, Christine, and Jody. Now, guys, I do want to acknowledge special shout outs to Sarah and Elena, both of whom sent me, that's right, photographs of them with their dehydrators, and they each won a JV Club t-shirt. It was a delightful piece of information to get from both of them. Totally made each of the days that I received that. What a joy. So guys, worry not. And Jenny Wade is aware, dehydrators are alive and well in today's world. What a relief. Anyway, I think that's it for me. It's a nice short one, just in the midst of Sketchfest per usual. I hope you guys are doing great, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Keep in touch. Bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yeah, I'm recording now, and I was just saying that right before I started recording, Sarah was telling me about this. So what was it? It was a mom group?
When we first moved to LA, we moved here a month before September 11th happened from New York City, and it was really weird because I had that kind of, this is going to sound so overblown, but I'm just being totally honest. I had this magical thinking feeling of if I had stayed in New York, this never would have happened to my city, New York. Oh, wow. So it was weird. And of course, we had like a 9-month-old kid. Everyone told me, you're so lucky that you weren't here. And of course, in retrospect, I was. But it was quite a shock because we moved to the Palisades when we first moved here. And I joined this kind of online parent listserv that helps you find, you know, I need a new roof and I need a babysitter and all this kind of stuff.
Which sounds really helpful.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's great, especially if you just moved to town and you don't know anything. And the Palisades were already giving me the creeps.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can think of a better place for you to move to be more culture shocked by not being in New York anymore than the Palisades.
It was like all white people and they all said the same thing. They said, isn't it great living here? You don't have to lock your doors. And I was like, I've lived in Manhattan almost my whole adult life, and I've been locking several doors every time I go in and out of my apartment. It's not that big of a deal.
It's really not.
I kind of like the security that locking my doors gives me. And I grew up in a very rural town where we didn't lock our doors. But I swear when I go back there and, you know, if I take my mom's dog for a walk or something in the evening, I feel like evil is lurking behind every tree.
Yeah.
Whereas if I go to New York, I just think nothing bad can happen here.
I understand that.
I have the opposite feeling. But anyway, I joined this parent group so I could find, you know, resources or whatever. So I could find a babysitter. Oh my God. Please come take my child. Let me go out and be a normal adult.
First priority.
But I quit it because I will never forget this person posted on there. She said, does anybody know where I can find some cobblestones? Because I'm going to Europe all summer. They always have to drop like the duration of their vacation and where they're going.
Because we can afford to go to Europe.
I'm going to stay in a chalet with other millionaires in Europe. And I need to practice walking on cobblestones in high heels before we go there.
I just find that. I mean, and then you quit.
Yes.
But then people were weighing in. People were legitimately weighing in.
Well, like, they all said,
great
go.
Question.
There's this really, it's kind of the Euro trashy. Is it still okay to say Euro trashy or
I have no idea.
Is that too harsh?
Is it not PC?
Against rich white people? they are really getting the short end of the stick these days. Those rich white people. But they all said this mall in Beverly Hills that's like a little fake street. The cobblestones are probably made out of resin. Like, they're not even real cobblestones.
Yeah. Or they just ground up the bones of poor people and fashioned them into a cobblestone.
And soldered them together with tears of poor
people. That's right. That's right.
Bones and tears of poor people.
Oh, it's beautiful.
So everyone suggested that. And she was like, I'm there twice a week. Why didn't I think of that? I just never looked down.
I just find it so appalling and wonderful that the person that is practical, this is what I was saying, is the person that is practical enough to think ahead that she's going to need to do this, but not practical enough to just not wear Manolo Blahniks on the cobblestone streets.
Well, I don't know if that's practical, though. I mean, I'm usually thinking, oh, God, how many pairs of underwear do I need to bring? Also, I like to, when I go on vacation, I like to bring old underwear.
Just in case.
Just to keep it sexy with my husband. No, I bring like old underwear because I don't know. It might just be as simple as an animal marking its territory. Uh-huh. But I feel like I'm going to bring my holiest, oldest period underwear and throw them away when I'm done. I'll just wear them once and throw them away.
I mean, I do understand that because I feel like I traveled with a girlfriend of mine to New Zealand, and she had a sweater that was very bulky, and she said, you know, I didn't know if I was going to need a sweater here, and so I packed something that I would be very comfortable leaving behind.
Yeah.
At the first hotel we stayed in.
The ugly shit. And then I get to where I'm going and I'm like, I packed all my ugly shit and my stained period panties.
Yeah.
Like, why did I pack this shit? And then when you go somewhere, like I remember going, I haven't been to Europe in a really long time. I haven't been on cobblestone since
God,
I don't know
that's
when.
That's got to hurt.
But I remember going there and being attracted to really ugly clothes. Like I would I would never wear, you know, say a beet red blazer with gold buttons.
Uh-huh.
But you're in Italy and everyone is dressing in these amazing colorful outfits and wearing tons of jewelry.
Yes.
And I would just be like, that's the look.
That's who I am.
I need lots of gold bangles.
Sure.
And big heavy ear. I don't even have pierced ears. That's how minimalist I am. I've never got my ears pierced because I was too chicken.
You were?
Yeah.
So that was the reasoning. It wasn't any other reason other than
I was really afraid of needles.
It took me a long time too to work up the nerve. I think peer pressure, honestly, was the thing that pushed me over the edge.
How old were you?
You know what? I was probably 13. Mm-hmm. And possibly my dad might have said you need to wait until there's a teen after the number of age that you are. But I definitely, I really remember the feel in the same way that I viscerally remember and even so silly, but actually dream about having braces sometimes. I still have braces dreams I really remember that hot, burning feeling after you've gotten your ears pierced.
Did they use a gun?
It's very,
yes.
That is a sensation I will never forget. It is truly emblazoned.
It's weird about ear piercing. I remember my mom said 13 too, but then we were in a mall with our cousins and there was a lady there who had ice, a needle, and a potato.
Oh,
and that's how she was piercing.
Oh, I think I've heard about the folksiness of the potato.
They put the potato behind your ear,
yeah.
Ice your ear. And so my older sister Becky was 11, and my mom caved and let her get her ears pierced. And then, so 11 became the new age when you could get your ears pierced. But when I was 11, I was supposed to start allergy shots, and I literally ran away from home.
Yeah.
I was terrified
of needles.
You ran
away. I know, needles. How does that stuff get imprinted? You know what I mean? I'm curious what stuff is sort of inherent, like that sort of old school, you know, this is dangerous. This is old Neanderthal / Cro-Magnon / Lucy kind of like... This protected us. To be afraid of this protected us versus how much of it is like socialized.
And then you
the
overcome
you
it
live.
With like your need for ornament.
That's
if
right.
If you can overcome it, you can get earrings.
Desperately, because you need to attract whoever you're interested in. You've got to get on their radar.
Well, I have two kids. I was terrified of shots. I think you're just born that way. And I do think it's actually very natural and probably... hardy and survival of the fittest to be afraid of something penetrating
your skin. I think you're totally right.
So I have one kid. I made, because my mom would always lie before we go to the doctor and say, you know, no, you're not going to get any shots. And then it would be like a 3-shot booster visit or something. And I couldn't stand that. I couldn't stand when my parents lied or when they snuck out and left us with a babysitter and just crept out without saying goodbye. So I kind of made a vow to never do that. And so with my first kid, he'd say, we're going to the doctor, am I going to get a shot? And I'd say, yes. And you feel like horrible, like a sadist. Yes, we are. Probably
are
too.
Are you ever?
Honesty feels very sadistic sometimes. And he was okay with it. But then my second kid is the run down the hallway and try to punch the elevator buttons at the doctor's office and run away when she's getting shots. So, and I was kind of like that. I understand.
Yeah, I was too. I for sure was. I remember.
It's not a good feeling. But now I just, well, now it doesn't faze me at all. I think it's after you've had like babies.
Mm-hmm.
You just feel like, well, whatever, you're poking me now. When I had a baby at Cedars here, my second kid, I said, can I just look at my chart? Because I always like to look at my chart. And I could barely read it because I was so doped up after I had the baby. And it was like all the drugs that were found in Elvis's system when he was born. And I started to kind of go like, when the nurse would come in, I'd be like, I don't want any more. Like, I want to see what it's like to feel real again.
Yeah. And did you?
Yeah, I'm not an opiate person. I'm in no danger of getting addicted to Vicodin. I hate it too.
It makes me feel horrible also. It makes me feel very depressed.
I feel like I'm getting sick.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's true of most opiates for me too. It's a feeling of, and also, and these guys know because I have a history of sort of like panic and anxiety, especially when I was younger. There became this urgent need to just feel not drugged or to feel not out of my body or whatever. And so things like that, that are sort of sensory altering, are just not appealing to me anymore. I don't even like really getting drunk because I sort of start to feel like loosey goosey with my limbs. And
and then you do the thing where you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and think of everything, try to remember everything that you said at the party and to whom, and
just can't
regretting all of it. What I call playing the tapes, because I'm retro like that. But you play the tapes in your brain and you rewind them and think about them and obsess about them. I wish I could say as you get older, I'm 46 now, that goes away, but you still do think about it. You just don't pay as much, you don't give it as much credence.
Right.
I don't take my own attacks upon myself seriously.
Listen, that's huge. Yeah. That is a huge development, I think, it for is. Anybody who has that self-critical eye, which most of us do.
But I have the opposite thing about panic. I don't remember panicking very much as a kid, and I should have because I grew up in kind of unstable circumstances, but I have really bad flight anxiety. Mm. So I do. I just went to New York last week and I took Xanax on the way there and on the way back, because otherwise I would just be sweating and my heart would be beating really fast.
But that's in a situation where it actually takes you kind of back to zero. Do you know what I mean? I mean, that was my experience, I think, with situations like that, is like if you're actually in the place where, you know, you have palpitations and you're sweating and stuff, something mild like that can just sort of take you back to like, I feel slightly like I don't care if we crash.
Yes,
but
that's
mostly
exactly how
I'm
feel.
Just calm. Yeah.
And I remember once when I was flying, and I was flying the first time I ever flew first class, and I didn't even know about prescription drugs that could make you feel better or anything. So I think I'd had like a screwdriver or something, but I was still clawing my husband's arm and my heart was beating really fast. But I remember just giggling like, ha ha. Imagine me. I always thought I'd die in coach, but here I am in first class.
I made it.
Ready
just in time.
Ready to crash. This is the way I've got to go. Might as well go this classy way.
Yeah. Do you feel like, and I do want to ask you about the sort of shaky uncertainty of what you just described in your situation of being a child, but also I think dovetailing into that, do you feel like you built a comedy self-defense mechanism early because of that uncertainty as well? Because that is honestly my best defense. Like if the times I've been in the emergency room, the best I feel is if I am trying to make the doctor laugh. And that feels very broken in some ways, but it really keeps me from, like if I am trying to be clever in some way, it kind of eats up the part of my brain that wants to spiral into like, maybe I'm going to die. Maybe da da da. Maybe da da da. Like, it's kind of a great way to distract myself.
Oh, definitely. I'm sure. Like, I grew up in a household that there was a lot of domestic abuse between my parents and
so both,
between
one to the other.
Parents and children. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so it just felt unsafe at any time. So I think you do, when you have unstable, you know, what should be the most stable situation in your life, your home life, you know, it's self-contained. It's, you've got locked doors.
Thank God. Unless you're someplace crazy,
right,
like the rural countryside.
Like not
now, hold
the Palisades,
on.
But No, I mean, I think that that's supposed to be your baseline and your safety. And so when you go out of that, you have to make up one or more personae to compensate for that feeling of instability always. And I did it like I was just thinking the other day because I was thinking about one of my kids and how he's sort of similar to this. He gets along with all kinds of different people, which is great. But I remember being that way, but never really feeling rooted in any group. You know, I was like a floater in high school where I got along with everybody. And part of it was because I was always sort of putting on a show.
Yeah,
I was really good at doing impersonations. My top three were probably Belinda Carlisle, which I can't do anymore. I've completely Amazing. Blown out my vocal range there. And Yoda.
Jedi you are.
Which I can still sort of. But who can't do Yoda? That's like the cheesy one. Nobody else could in my town.
Yeah, listen, I don't know. I think
the
it's more
Yoda
rare.
Of Covington, Louisiana.
I mean, you live in L.A. now, so sure, everyone can do Yoda. Oh, God. But come on.
It's Yoda on every corner.
Uh-huh.
Turning tricks.
But it's tough stuff.
But then the other one was, which I was the best at, was there was this toilet paper brand called Banner Toilet Paper. And it had like a rolling toilet paper roll with eyes and a mouth. You know, the cardboard tube
sure.
was like a Senor Wences kind
sure.
of mouth.
Which someone went, in the advertising room was like, we came up with it! Yeah. Guys, this is
everybody
so
wants
much
to wipe
paper.
With something with eyeballs
right,
and a mouth on
right.
it. But that was my big impression because it was like, hey, I'm new Banner and you're going to love me. And it was a rolling toilet paper roll. And
everybody you can said, catch me.
Yeah.
What? This is weird. This is a weird chase game with toilet paper.
Pants around the ankles, yeah. chasing a roll of toilet paper.
That is an advertisement. I would enjoy watching. I love that you were a hit primarily for that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and how many siblings do you have and where do you fall in that?
I have one older sister, Becky, and then I have two younger sisters, Debbie and Rachel, and a younger brother, Michael. So I'm the second of five.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And where my, was... My parents where? Divorced and we when my brother was like one. So we would have had more because my mother is super Catholic and
okay.
never used birth control or anything. And I remember after my parents got divorced, she'd still be like, well, I guess I can adopt. Like she felt guilty because she hadn't had enough children.
Are you serious?
Isn't that
after
nuts?
Five?
After five. She always felt like she wanted to do more. And now
Gosh,
she comes
so
and visits
amazing.
Me and I have two and she's like, two is so hard, isn't it? And she really means it.
Yeah.
The first time she said it, I was like, what the fuck do you mean by that? But she
yeah.
means it. And I'm like, well, you had five. And she said, yeah, but you guys just started to take care of each other.
Well, I have heard that, I guess. Yeah, where they're sort of
I don't know if
like,
that's such a good
I don't know if that's
form
a good,
of parenting.
Yeah.
I need to have more kids so I can have some babysitters.
Sure.
One of them's bound to be a babysitter.
Sure. If I just keep popping them out, somebody's going to have that gene.
I started babysitting when I was nine.
You did?
Outside of the home.
Oh, outside of the home.
For other people's. I remember one of my
nine.
The first kids I babysat, it was a six-week-old baby. And it was, you know, next door.
Yeah.
So I was next door to my mom. But it was still a six-week-old baby
That's
and you have a
crazy.
Nine-year-old.
That's
and my daughter's
crazy.
Nine now. I don't know.
You would
if
never
I'd...
let her.
No.
6 weeks.
I wouldn't hire her to watch her. Let's
oh,
put it that
no.
way.
Yeah, nine seems very young. I mean, I feel like the whole point is that you're old enough to be a kid without parents home. And
yeah.
nine doesn't feel.
Well, I wanted to get
enough.
Out there and make some money because it was, you know, the rate was like 50 cents an hour.
Sweet. That's sweet right there. That is sweet.
Going out to 75, you know. And I would use it to buy like snack foods that I'd hoard in my bedroom and
oh,
keep away
welcome
from
welcome to all of us, I yeah. think. God, that was the best.
Captain Crunch, Chef Boyardee ravioli. I went for sweet
oh,
and savory.
Chef Boyardee being a thing that, boy, that really feels like it would just be in the pantry of my house.
Not in our pantry because my mom was like a nature freak who just, you know, had us eat granola. And she would only buy soda and Doritos and things if we were had a babysitter coming, which actually made the transition to babysitter very smooth because we were
appealing.
Like, will you please go out so
yeah.
we can have soda?
Yeah, no kidding. That's funny. It's interesting that she had that she had the inclination to sort of please a babysitter that way.
Yeah, I think she was also
like,
smoothing
no
over
our...
that we were getting a that, you know, a babysitter was coming.
Uh-huh. Where
we
was this?
Some.
Sorry, where
oh,
was
Oh, well, I was born in Kansas City, Missouri, but
okay.
we moved to Louisiana when I was six.
Okay,
so
okay.
I kind of identify with being more from there.
Sure.
Even though when I got there, I was like, listen to these hicks.
Cut to a year
like,
later.
I was like second grade. I'm going to say you guys and not y'all. You guys sound dumb.
Did you ever kind of take on those colloquialisms?
Oh, yeah. I say y'all all the time now. Yeah. I remember,
where in Louisiana was it?
You know how New Orleans is on Lake Pontchartrain, on the southern shore of it? Uh-huh. Across the lake, you go across that long bridge, the causeway, and there's Mandeville, and that's where I went to grade school, and then there's Covington right up the highway. And so that's where I lived in either one of those towns and went to school in both those towns.
And what took your mom to there?
My dad got a job there. He
that was before your parents divorced. Sorry. Yeah. Right.
They divorced when I was like 13. Well, they separated when I was 13 and divorced when I was 14.
So what's the age difference between your youngest brother? Because you said he was one 12. And your
I'm
oldest.
I'm 12 years older than he is.
And how old is, and your, what about your older?
She's 2 years older. So there's 14 years apart.
That is a big, that is
so I know my parents had sex at least five times.
Uh-huh.
My sister caught them doing it once too. Luckily I didn't do that. And I don't think my kids have done that to me. If they have, they've been very quiet about it.
They're just sitting with it like silently and waiting for it
it's
to
a weird
to
thing
light.
When your kids like figure out that not only, you know, that's another thing, because I'm a reproductive rights activist. I've always been involved in escorting at abortion clinics and raising money for abortion funds. I'm very open about that. And
we're going to need to stop this podcast. I need to ask you to leave. What if that was your
exactly. Did you see? I had a flash of, really? Oh, well, I'm used to that. But I'm very open with my kids about sex ed and stuff like that. And they get it like crazy in school. I mean, they pretty much talk about it so much in school to older kids that they get bored with it. Mm-hmm. They're like, yada, yada, condoms, blah, blah. Uh-huh. Like, it's just
I'm trying
a matter
to remember
of
if
to
I had that. I do feel like I got... I don't feel like I was oversaturated with sex ed information, but I also feel like the majority of what I remember was peer stuff. I do feel like and not that my parents didn't talk to me about it. I just feel like I must have just been lucky and average, because my sense of it is just that I sort of can't really remember when I found out about that stuff. And
oh,
so,
I do, because I wrote a book and I remembered all that stuff, and I got caught for drawing. You know, I saw my dad had Playboys. We didn't have the internet back then, so it was mostly like Playboys. And we had something that my mom bought, which is called Life Cycle Library, which was very straightforward about sex education and diagrammatic kind of things of the human body. I'll never forget. We had this is when I was in second grade. We had a babysitter in Houma, Louisiana, and she was looking at it with us. And she went, ha ha, look at his penis. And I remember going, penis, it's penis. I knew we never should have left Missouri. such a superiority complex for a 7-year-old. But I remember it was 7 when you start to be curious. So it happened to my son. We had the whole talk because he asked me questions about it. It happened with my daughter, probably earlier, because she's pretty precocious and I do think girls just get things earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Actually, I have a theory on why, you know, women, why we think our vaginas are dirty.
Uh-huh.
And
it's
because I think we're naturally sexual as girls, and people tell us, don't be that way. Don't touch that. Don't do that.
That definitely happened to me.
So I try to say to my daughter, wash your hands before you touch your vagina.
Good for you,
and
Sarah.
Do it in private.
Good for you. Because I do remember having, I mean, from a very young age, a feeling of guilt and shame associated with masturbating, because I didn't know what I was doing was wrong, and the way that it was expressed to me was not particularly gentle.
It's going to be interesting, because most people I know raise their kids with sort of a, they try not to shame them about sexuality. They just say, that's private, do it in your room. And I think, well, will the end result be that everyone's sexuality is just privately masturbating in their room when they get older, because that's the way they've been raised? I don't know.
Opposed to just zero communication from previous generations, so things kind of were played fast and loose in a different way, because everyone was kind of figuring it out for themselves.
Well, I used to say, like, the way I grew up was have sex first, ask questions later. And I wasn't particularly, I was like serially monogamous. But I did have sex, and I was sort of, and I thought I was going to hell like the first 100 times I had sex. I said the rosary. I thought.
Did you go to a Catholic school too?
Yeah, till college.
Was it co-ed or was it girls' school?
It was co-ed up until 8th grade.
Okay.
And then it was, you know, I went to an all girls high school, where they taught a class called Christian Sexuality, but it was
wonderful.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
That's and a long semester. I will of never just forget. Hearing the same
they
thing.
Showed us a slide of an X-ray of a fetus with an IUD embedded in its spine. And
wow.
said, this is why you shouldn't use birth control. So it was all about,
my God.
Don't do it until you get married. Don't use any kind of artificial birth control.
I was
except the rhythm method. And now we're going to teach you, sophomores in high school, how to use the rhythm method. So that's what I used for a couple years.
What a recipe for disaster. But you never got pregnant?
No.
Lucky duck.
I know. It's a... The pull-out method works sometimes.
I guess it does. It's just hard to feel confident about recommending that, I guess.
Oh, no. I would never recommend that.
Yeah.
I don't think you should ever let semen into your vagina unless you want to have a baby.
Yeah. Better safe than
I'm
sorry.
I'm a big condom advocate.
Yeah.
And just, you know, for pregnancy, for disease, for everything. And who wants to drip semen all day? I don't.
Some people love that. Makes me feel alive. Alive!
Yeah, exactly. I'm dripping.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's just a good practical point.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, because I don't think I've ever really talked about this
How can
before.
You seg from dripping semen into something else?
Don't worry. It's staying in the same wheelhouse. Okay. Do not worry for a moment.
Good.
I want to go back to the Playboy thing, because I don't know if I've really talked about this before, but I do find it fascinating. I'm just wondering if you're... understanding or your sense of sexuality leaned towards like women and nudity for women, and were you titillated by those? And I'm asking because for me, it was the first real exposure I had to sort of softcore, whatever you want to call it, was also Playboy. And so I didn't have, like, that's what I associated with sex was naked women. I just didn't know. I just didn't. You didn't see the other side. And I think
that's what drives our culture, though, is the male gaze looking at women.
Exactly.
When I looked at old Playboys, I remember my sister Becky and I used to sneak and look at them. I remember feeling like they were joking.
Mm.
Like that kind of just blank look, unfocused look into the camera that the women were giving and just holding their boobs or parting their labia or whatever. I remember just feeling like nobody does that in real life, because the real women that I knew in my life, my mom wasn't going around with that like sort of thousand yard stare.
Oh yeah,
clutching her breasts.
Why is mom only wearing a Letterman's jacket?
Why does mom have big wooden beads dangling over her? I love the old Playboys, though, because...
I mean, it really is extraordinary. Talk about a slice of life.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm sure people have written theses on the difference in women's breasts through the years
nipple
of Playboy.
History.
Absolutely. It's
nipples
fascinating.
Nipples used to be like big silver dollar pancake-sized nipples, and now it's all about the what I call the French burnt peanut nipple. You know,
the
those,
French burnt
those
peanut
those little
nipple.
Red candies. For you young people in the audience, they're like caramelized peanuts that are kind of bumpy and pinkish.
I'm sorry that this episode is not more explicit, everyone. I'll see what we can do.
You know what's funny? My husband and I went to a Playboy anniversary party years ago before we had kids. And we, you know, the swag was a coffee table book about the history of the Playmate or the centerfold or... And it is really great. It's fascinating to look at because the women at the beginning, I mean, aside from Marilyn Monroe being in the first ever Playboy, the women look like, and in some cases were, secretaries and people who either worked in the Playboy offices or they look very normal. Mm. They look like they could be my mom. But those weren't the Playboys I was looking at. Mm. I was looking at like the Big Bush, Farrah Fawcett Playboys when I was growing up.
And I was looking at, I guess, like...
80s Playboy.
80s, so it was like yeah,
was
lots
it smaller
of shaved
breasts?
And lots of...
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there might have been a crossover where it started getting into fake boobs already.
Mm-hmm.
Like the cartoonish, they hadn't figured it out kind of yet,
right.
Fake boobs.
There's
too,
a couple of years where you can tell they're just the silicone injection boobs.
Oof, it's so strange.
I know. When you look at it, you just feel like, I wonder where those women are now, because that causes all kinds of autoimmune problems.
Oh, absolutely. Did you have a sense? I mean, first of all, I'm impressed that even as a young person, you sort of had, I don't want to like inject an ironic sense into you, but even just the idea that it was something abnormal versus, I don't know if I walked away feeling like my body needed to look like that, at least not consciously, subconsciously, I'm sure. But
right.
But I don't know. I think I took on the male gaze.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think
we all
I think I was like, yes, I'm These women are attractive to me also in a sexual way, because this is my only photo of, like, this is my only snapshot of what sexuality and eroticism is.
As my husband says, when, you know, we've discovered our children were looking at naked things, he's like, everybody likes to look at naked people. And I said, you're right. I mean, yeah. It's a natural impulse. It's up to us to hopefully guide them towards healthier ways of viewing those things. But I think we all like to look at it. And I think that if you're just being exposed to, which we definitely were, the male gaze version of women, then that does shape what we find as attractive. Right. I mean, who among us hasn't, say, been having sex with someone and thinking, like, arching my back right now will look hot?
Sure, sure.
Because that's the way women pose when they're, you know, kneeling on a rattan chair in Playboy. So they're, you know, with their buttocks
in soft focus
skyward.
With a lot of ferns, yes, around.
Exactly. Yeah. But that Playboy book, this is kind of interesting, and this is a measure of how girls, I think, develop faster than boys. It was in our bookshelf. I never even thought about it. And my son never went searching for it. But my daughter is fascinated by it. Mm. And if I have one thing to worry about, it's that, and I've talked to her about, you know, I talk to you very frankly about sex and I answer your questions, but it's not up to you to tell other people all about it.
Right.
But that is my one concern, is that my
kid...
can
be that friend that, you
well,
know,
I'm sure she already is. But hopefully, yeah, she's giving people, you know, pretty just straightforward. I don't put anything in cutesy ways, you know.
You don't say wee wee and woo.
No, I've always said vagina, yeah, and vulva, and used the part names, and I don't know. It's feels like a grand experiment, because I certainly wasn't raised that way, and I feel like almost what I'm doing is behavioral therapy for me, which is to try to be just healthy and, mm-hmm, not, like I said, not coy about it. Because,
mm-hmm,
I remember when I got caught, My friend Courtney and I drew, like, all these naked people in a notebook. And one day we were cleaning, you know, it was like, I don't know if you were a slob when you were growing up, but, like, I was the biggest slob, and I just threw all shit under my bed until it was like a packed detritus, uh-huh, that I had to chip away at and figure out what to throw away. So we were having our big family cleaning day on a Saturday, and I found that notebook. I remember I had Lucy from Peanuts, like, doing that happy dance thing on the front. And I was like looking at it. I was in third grade at that point. So this was like second grade bullshit.
Oh boy.
People having sex on sofas.
Uh-huh.
And this is kind of interesting, because I'd only been exposed to Playboy. We drew people, like men and women having sex, but we drew cameras in the corners of the page.
Whoa, that's
with the Playboy
so
logo on them. Yes.
Oh my God.
So we were like,
that's
imagining.
Impressive.
My girlfriend and I, we were like social anthropologists doing this whole sex study thing.
I'm so interested in that. I really feel like that is super early signs of the way your brain and perspective.
But
developed.
That I was dissociating from. Yeah, that
everything
makes sense.
Is television.
Yes.
Everything.
Even these people. And also, we did not draw them looking pretty. Mm-hmm. I remember doing like long kind of cucumber tits and stuff, uh-huh, like that. We were more into the realistic.
The Robert Crumb.
It was like my great grandmother who I walked in on nude once. It was like her sex scene. But anyway, I just took the notebook and I went and I threw it in the trash. And then, uh-oh, I went back to my room, chipping away again at the detritus, went to take another load of trash to the garbage. And I saw my parents kind of flipping through the notebook.
Oh.
And I did that thing that kids do where you're just like, hello there, and you turn around and walk away. And I remember my face kind of burning, and I just went back in my room and I crawled under my bed halfway, and I was still pulling out old notes and snot rags and whatnot. And my parents came in the room and closed the door. I could see their feet. They came in and they were like, we need to talk to you. And basically they just told me, you can never do this again, and you better never... You know, they didn't say, hey, it's normal to want to look at naked people. They didn't ever say that. They just said, I remember my dad explicitly saying, if I ever catch you drawing pictures like this again, you'd better run for the hills.
Ugh.
I know. Isn't that weird?
Is it just, so did they present a united front when they were establishing rules, but then they also were like at each other at other times?
Yes. I don't think there really were any rules. I didn't know what the rules were until I broke them, you know? Except for whatever I was learning in religion class and church, which I think I'm one of those lucky Catholic kids who came of age. I was in middle school during the time when lay people started coming in and teaching religion class, and they were all like, don't take the Bible literally. Mm. Bible, you know, it's a fairy tale and evolution is real and all these things. That,
wow. Even
so in my lifetime, okay. I've seen it regress back the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Except for this new pope seems... Look, I never get too hopeful when it comes to the Catholic Church. I just don't. I just feel like I knew pretty early on, sixth, seventh grade, I was sneaking in, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird and sneaking it into my hymnal and reading that instead of paying attention, because it seemed to me like Mary was like half a person, you know? You get to be the mother of God, but you can't ever have sex or be a sexual person. Yeah. And as a kid, I didn't think she should be able to have sex.
Right.
But I just couldn't believe that was it for womanhood. Like that was the womanhood that got put on a pedestal. I kind of got bored with it, to be frank. But like I said, there were a lot of great lessons learned, which devout Catholics might disagree with me. They might think that because the seeds of doubt were planted because I was taught evolution and things like that. Uh-huh. But yeah, I'm pretty non-religious now.
Well, if you're so, by the time you were a teenager in Louisiana and you were sort of an age where you were interested in exploring sex, guilt aside, your mom was, you didn't have a stepfather. It was just your mom.
No, my mom was and so Catholic. Five, and all she five of you marriage. Were
by that time did. No, I guess if it's only 2 years older, she was probably still.
Older sister, I probably had sex before she did because she was like a straight A student and a real what we used to call a goody goody.
Mm-hmm.
She was. Just super, I don't know. I don't know if I want to say super nerdy, like it's a bad thing or anything. But she...
That part of her social life wasn't developed in the same way that it was for you.
Yeah, I don't think it was till like she graduated from high school and went to Europe. But I think I had sex when I was 15 for the first time.
Who were the, since you weren't going to school with them, who were the sort of guys in your circle or the who was around? Especially if you felt you were a floater.
It's kind of weird. And I think it's because I had an older sister who was 2 years older than I was, that was my cultural frame of reference. So I always dated guys who were her age, who were in her class. So I did have that, what I now think of is the ultimate in creepiness. I was in high school and I had college boyfriends, which is... Isn't that seem weird?
I'm torn by that too. I didn't have, I don't think, I'm trying to remember. I guess I didn't really have college boyfriends when I was in high school. It's true, I didn't, but I don't know if that would have, I don't know. It's
I don't know,
really
just
hard.
The psyche of the guy who has a high school girlfriend and goes to the prom who's in college. Yeah. Doesn't it seem like you would move on in some way? It reminds me of the Matthew McConaughey's character in Dazed and Confused.
Right.
Like, I'm working for the city. Like,
These were my golden years. I'm just going to stay in them forever.
Although these guys, they went to college and everything. It just, you know, it ultimately didn't work out.
I mean, I know as a girl, I wouldn't have dated someone who was still in high school by the time I was in college. But I don't know... I think that's all, like cultural too. I don't know if boy. I think it's still. It's always okay for. I mean, it's certainly not always okay ethically, but like it's kind of still. Like, and so I think you know, a 19-year-old guy maybe isn't because of maybe actual rates of physical maturity too or emotional maturity. They're just maybe not thinking the same way.
I remember
we
got in trouble a couple of times because we were usually parking somewhere, making out, or even further, but. But by cops, and they didn't say this is statutory rape, like even though he was 19 and I was 17 or anything like that. Nobody ever said that. And it's interesting to me now when I look back on my life, because a big part of especially having a daughter, although I also talked to my son about this, and it's a big topic right now in the state of California, how they just passed a bill about affirmative consent. And it really makes you think that as women, we're not really told how to consent. We're told how to deny sex and how you should not have sex and you should wait and you'll feel much better if you don't, which doesn't ever address what your urges are and what your needs are. And so I look back at my life and I think, did I ever give affirmative consent? Mm. And I don't think I did because I wasn't taught. I just sort of passively gave in after saying no several times. Mm-hmm. I sort of passively gave in, which is, I don't know. It's not like it's necessarily, I can't say my past is really sad to me, but it's definitely something that I'd like to see in the future women feel more confident in that area and feel like I actually did say I'm going to have sex with someone, and it was my choice. Yeah. And
I will say that I do feel that I had that experience, and I'm not sure if that comes from, I mean, these guys know I was essentially raised by my dad, a single dad. And so I don't know if that comes from sort of being empowered in that way in non-sexual ways that then carry over into your sexuality. Do you know what I mean?
Because sometimes how did your dad empower you?
I just feel like there was no, it's not like he treated me like a boy by any stretch of the imagination, but I also don't feel that he treated me like a girl. Do you know? I feel like he just treated me like his kid.
Yeah.
And so,
but did he talk to you? Do you mind if I ask? I just am curious about, did he talk to you about sex? Cause I'm always open to learning. Yeah. Sounds like you're positive. You do come from an affirmative
consent. But you know what's funny? Because
situation.
I really don't remember talking about it with either of my parents. But I also don't remember. I mean, with my mom, for sure, I just didn't really talk about anything with her, especially not during those times because I was presenting. No, that's not even true. I was not really working hard to present a false front to her that I was a good kid. I was lying. I was sneaking out. I was doing drugs. You know, and neither of my parents knew, like, had any proof that I was doing drugs, but my mom for sure was positive I was doing way worse, and my dad for sure was positive I wasn't doing anything wrong. They just sort of like split down the middle, where one saw me as an angel and one saw me as a devil,
right?
And I think, and I don't know where that comes from, but I don't remember having
one parent that liked you.
For sure. Listen, I know,
I think my parents,
and
then thought
I
was
a great
the
relationship
devil
with my mom. I think my mom just didn't know how to be a single mom. And I think there was just a lot of residual pain over feeling like that wasn't her plan. You know, her plan was to be married forever.
Right.
And when that gets ripped away from you, I think, you know, in her case, she just kind of, there was just part of her that kind of shut down. And I think it was just really hard for her. And so, and also she was probably seeing in me, she's Mormon, not as much practicing now, but she was probably seeing in me, oh, I remember when I rebelled again. Like this thing that she wanted to kind of maybe keep me on the straight and narrow, whereas my dad is an atheist and
right
probably thought I
would,
you
don't get,
you know,
like a rump springo when you're Mormon, like
no,
the Amish do?
No, opposite.
No, you have to go on a
opposite
missionary.
Exactly. And then you come back. I've talked about this
what
before. Then
gem
you come back and all you want to do is have sex. So you just get married so that you can do it.
Wow.
You know, and then that's the person when you're 20 years old that you're expected to, you know, be with, not just until death do us part, but for all eternity. But you know what? Bless them. Some people really make it work, it seems.
I know. But I just heard Aziz Ansari was talking on Howard Stern about how his parents have an arranged marriage. And he said it's almost like their love deepens over the year from coming from being complete strangers. But
yeah.
I still can't. And I'm, you know, it's a cultural difference too, I'm sure. But I can't imagine,
I know,
doing that. I can't imagine getting, and I would never expect my daughter to stay a virgin until she gets married, or either kid. You
right
know, I just, that's one thing. I just feel like let's inform both of them the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It's the, trying to be the most feminist that I can be with both of my kids. If anything, they're like, hey, feminine.
They become
not
become
again
polar opposite.
We're equal already.
Lay off.
No, my battles don't have to be my kids' battles. There's a, I can't remember his name, but there's a columnist, an African-American columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And he was talking about his daughter wrote, and I think his wife is Caucasian, but he was talking about how his daughter wrote a paper for Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and he read it, and it said, racism is over. And he was like, I still can't catch a cab.
Yeah.
And my daughter's writing this, but it made me realize, instead of lecturing her, it made me realize my battles don't have to be her battles.
It is. It's a really weird, I think it is kind of an interesting challenge, and I'm not a parent yet, but to be in the place where, of course, part of your kind of responsibility or your just natural existence is going to be to bring your experience as a young person in, but obviously we are in a part of a different culture, and so finding that balance between being able to talk experientially and be that parent, because that's important too, but also to somehow ask questions of them and to try to get a sense of what their climate is like when they're not with you,
right?
You know, and to sort of, I guess, adapt accordingly as a parent. And but you know, racism isn't over. surprise!
It's like if my daughter said sexism isn't over.
Yeah, we're done. We did it.
I heard her asking her dad the other. This is how like like, you know, I don't feel the need to insert my pontificating into every moment. I heard her asking Andy the other day, what's the difference between sexism and sexy again? And I was like, amazing. On my way out the door to go somewhere, and I sort of went like that kind of cartoonish slowing down. And then I just kept walking. I was like, I'm going to let him handle that.
Yeah.
But I do trust him to handle it in probably a more interesting and funny way to me.
I got to be honest with you, and I can't believe I haven't said this to more friends who are both brilliant and funny and have children, but I would actually like to be a fly on the wall with you guys. And I think that would be charming and wonderful. And probably most of the time I would be like, this is great. This is exactly what I want to do.
It's weird. I mean, I'm sure we have just the same issues that anybody has, and we fight, and they're boring. You know, it's like I often feel like I live in a house with three people who all have attention deficit issues, some clinically diagnosed. Mm-hmm. So I have to say everything 100 times. And the way I reacted to that at first was to become even more manic about keeping calendars and writing everything down. And now I've sort of given in. Probably this has to do with I do mindful meditation too. I just had to start being sane, although it doesn't work on airplanes. Not yet, anyway. Mm. But I do that to try to just calm my brain down and not obsess over things. But I kind of stopped making obsessive lists and calendars. So as a result, we run out of milk. I forget things. I forgot my daughter's piano recital last year. I felt terrible. Lots of people think I'm a flake now. Mm. But you know what? I just don't give a shit.
Yeah.
It does. It's the great thing. I just was in New York with my little sister, Debbie, and she turned 40. And I said, welcome to the world of not living unironically and not giving a shit. It's so great. I don't sit around worrying. Like I said, the tapes still play in my brain sometimes. But I just don't care.
Yeah.
Thinks I'm crazy. Whatever.
Right. Right.
It adds a little dash of flavor to the evening.
I do feel like I can say that I see, and I've talked about it before, I do see that happening incrementally, and I cherish it. You know, there is a weird thing happening where as the changes in my body persist, and I'm, you know, more liable to gain weight, or I'm more liable to have a wrinkle or whatever, there is this kind of really interesting balance that I hope maintains itself, which is that there's this a flare up when I see it happening where, you know, 5 years ago me would be in a panic about that.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the more my metabolism slows down, the more I'm balanced out by me going like, meh.
Yes.
What am I going to do? And what am I going to do? Lose my mind over this?
Yeah. Well, hopefully not. I mean, that's the whole thing. I'm like, now I'm just afraid of dementia and Alzheimer's and literally losing my mind. Like, I've got to do things that keep my brain active and alive.
I don't think you need to worry about that at all. Come on.
I've had a lot of coffee this morning. You're catching me on a coffee
high. I don't
know.
As a parent and a writer and, you know, I think that your brain is firing just fine. I think if anything, you know, we're hyper-stimulated in the world that we live in now. So we start feeling like we're missing stuff because,
you know, this
there's
week,
just firing at all the time.
I took a break from any kind of viral video or the thing that was supposed to break the internet yesterday or whatever. I did an interview earlier today where somebody asked me about it. And I just said, I don't talk about those people. Do it. Uh-huh. And I've been so happy this week. And I realize it's probably because I was in New York part of the time, which is my city. I just feel like that's where my soul is. But I just have been reading more, looking at things on the internet less, and it feels great. Like, it feels like, I don't know, so much better.
That makes sense to me. Let me ask a few questions. I want to get into one of my favorite parts of the podcast in a moment, which is also sort of the winding down of it. But it's a ramp up before a wind down.
Okay.
So I have this picture of you kind of socially as to who you were when you were a teenager, but what artistically excited you? You know, were you a big TV watcher? Were you allowed to do that? Were you buried in books? I know you made the To Kill a Mockingbird reference. Did you listen to music? Did you have access to that?
Yes. I read, you know, my parents didn't have a lot of music. They had like Barbra Streisand, Simon and Garfunkel, and Herb Alpert, which I'm you know, as an adult, I'm like, that's not half bad.
Sure.
You know, it could have been a lot worse. Oh, Henry Mancini, like the Pink Panther soundtrack.
But it wasn't the
Rolling
Stones.
We made do with like 10 LPs and that was it. I wasn't allowed to watch a lot of TV. And when I did, my mom made it clear that she thought it was crap. Mm-hmm. But I did watch all the Brady Bunches and Gilligan's Islands and all that kind of stuff. And Jaws ruined my life. My dad took me to see that when I was like way too young. And I think it's the best movie ever made.
It's so amazing.
It's so good. We started this tradition in our family. I'm sure way too young for my daughter. Although me and both my kids surf, which kind of takes your mind off sharks when you're in the ocean. Actually,
well, that's good to hear, because I feel it would be the opposite, where I haven't done it.
It's the only thing that's ever taken my mind, and it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And I think it's because you're doing something focused and physical that, you know, when you're waiting for a wave and your legs are dangling over the surfboard, you are sort of thinking, well, chomp, chomp, you know? But then once you're doing it, you're like focused on so many other, like I said, physical things and geological things that it takes your mind off of it. But, I love Jaws.
Oh, you started a tradition.
Oh, we watch it on Thanksgiving Day after
That's
Thanksgiving dinner.
That's pretty great.
Which is pretty cool.
I might have to adopt that. That's a really great tradition.
It is great because it's like you're kind of comatose. You're just laying there. And it's not really that sickening. And all the acting is so good.
No, it's not. You don't see that much. You see like some
Actually, my daughter just went as Jaws to school for Halloween.
Oh, I love
We bought the pre-made shark costume, but we sewed a bunch of like shreds of flesh-looking fabric around.
Great.
And we pinned some yellow barrels that she was dragging around behind her.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And she painted her face looked out of the mouth of the shark. So she drew like blood all
as if she was still inside the shark.
As if she were Quint.
Oh, that's great. God, that movie is great. Okay. That's good to know. And good to know about the surfing too. Did you do any sports when you were in?
No, we were too. Well, I was kind of a quitter where I would try a bunch of things, but it was partially because the minute I'd try something, my dad would start complaining about how much it costs, like gymnastics or tennis or swimming. So I was kind of one of those, you know, it was acting. It was pretending. You know, I would do each team 1 year and sort of pretend. I'm the tennis girl now.
Sure, sure.
Now I'm a softball type.
Right.
And I was never very good at at anything.
At least you tried it out. I feel like I didn't even bother trying.
I could pop wheelies. You know, riding a bike was free.
That sounds pretty good.
And I could, we did live in a neighborhood where you could just, I would take off at after breakfast and be gone on my bike all day.
Well, isn't that, because I really still have that, these guys know, like to a fault, where it is very important for me to ride my bike, and it's very important for me to live in a neighborhood where I have that feeling. So I think I might just be Arrested Development kid, where all the stuff that was important to me then still is. But especially, I'm sure, growing up in a large family, that feels like what an immediate way to really be in your own space. And
there's
and to
nothing
be
like the breeze going through your hair.
Yeah,
I kind of
I can't speak to that. Because I wear a helmet.
I've rekindled that a little bit lately with roller skating.
Ooh,
because it was the same way.
Yeah,
and we were down in Austin for the Austin City Limits Music Festival, which was really cool. It was like my kids' first time going to a music festival.
That's fun.
And my son, who's almost 14, we kind of like some of the same bands. Like, we like Lana Del Rey, and he likes Major Lazer, which I complained about the whole time we were watching it. But The Replacements played.
Oh,
so it
fun.
Was, and they were amazing. Paul Westerberg sang half the set lying in a hammock, which was really funny.
But because he can.
Yeah. Just playing his guitar with the mic, you know, bent over in front of his mouth. It was great. But it was really, we roller skated down there, and there's nothing like, I know Austin's kind of a large town, but it's still a small town. Small town roller skating rink. It's just the best. And it gives you this sense of freedom. And I remember looking, there were some younger kids who were couple skating. And when I was younger, just waiting to be asked to couple skate. And now, oh my God, this is the cheesiest metaphor for my life and my maturity. Now I wanted to tell those kids, skate alone. You'll feel so much better. Like, I just felt like, I'm sure people are looking at me like, who is that crazy old lady?
Yeah.
That spastic old lady, you know, skating alone. Get away from her. She's going to hate
whatever
you.
Whatever her reasons are for being here, they're not good. They're not good.
I just felt like you get that breeze going in your hair.
Yeah.
Kids don't get it like that today because they all have helmets on, which is sad. But
yet also wear a helmet. says the girl who has been in numerous bike accidents, but persists in biking also. All right, I want to get into this MASH game because I'm excited about the very first category. Now, you're going to be picking three of each thing I say because I do a little process of elimination. Okay. It's an old school game, yep. And then we'll give you your future, your sort of alternate reality future. But the first thing I want to ask is, give me three places in the world that it would be super fun to roller skate in, not inside, could be inside, could be outside, that you'll never be able to roller skate in, but just like, is it Venice Boulevard, or I mean, is it Venice Beach, is it, you know,
not Paris, Rome, because there's too many cobblestones.
Please, don't get me started. It's so inconvenient.
Wait, can it be some place that you couldn't roller skate, maybe?
It should be a place you can never roller skate.
Okay.
It should be three totally wild.
All right, let's say...
But how fun would it be to be able to have the, and you're perfectly safe, nothing bad can happen to you.
Yes, okay, Kauai... And I will say Rome and San Francisco.
Yeah.
When I read about culture in San Francisco, I'm like, how do those fuckers do that?
I know. I have no idea. Talk about something that makes me a backseat driver, so to speak, when someone's on a skateboard. I feel like somehow I want to put my foot on a brake that doesn't exist. Like, I get real jumpy very, very quickly and always have. So
we
it's
have
not
to
even
trust so many people.
Thing. We really
in this
do.
World, not to collide
we
with
We really
us.
Do. We absolutely do. Okay, next one is going to be three, you know, I'm just going to go for it. These are roller skating places. This is just vacation home. But I'm going to go imaginary places for vacation home. So you're going to have to think in terms of
imaginary
the Star Wars.
Okay, Rivendell from Lord of the Rings. Right. There's really no other place in Middle Earth I'd rather live.
Right?
It's kind of a sucky place. I guess Hobbiton, but I'd feel really fat in those little houses. I'd feel so bulky. But they do have lots of good snacks in there.
That's true. Have you been to Hobbiton, actual Hobbiton in New Zealand? Because
I've been to New Zealand, but
they keep it there. And it's like so exciting for a second, and then the crushing blow of like opening up the actual door and realizing it's a false front
there's just like a
hollow cave in there feels like, no, you really want them to, if they're going to make that available, you want it to be inside,
I want it furnished
too. Yeah, fully immersive
with that pound cake that they're always talking about and the magic tobacco.
Heavens yes.
Do you think that's supposed to be that they're high all the time?
I wondered that too. I wonder if it's like, I don't know. I think about that too. I kind of suspect yes.
Yeah.
But
don't they
don't
call
know.
It, what do they call it? Something leaf or something?
Yeah. I can't remember.
Sounds like a weed.
I've got Rivendell and Hobbiton. I love that you're really specifically
this really has to be imaginary, huh?
Well, you know.
I know. That house, you probably don't even know this movie, but there's an old movie from, it might even be the 60s. I'm not old enough to have watched in its first run, but they used to play it on TV called Hello Down There.
Oh.
Richard Dreyfuss is in it.
Oh, really?
And he has band. But Tony Randall plays this dad where he's like this kooky scientist dad, and he has an underwater house, and he makes his family all go live there.
Oh my God, I need to see this.
And Richard Dreyfuss is the and Janet Leigh is the mom.
Uh-huh.
And Richard Dreyfuss is the daughter's boyfriend, I think. And he and his band just play songs.
Oh my God. Hello Down There. Yeah. I would love that.
Okay, so the underwater house.
I love underwater
house.
Okay, you hit it. You got all three. Great. Let's move on to three books that many people believe that someone else wrote, but you actually are the author of these three books.
Hmm.
And I know that's like me saying, you know, rip this wonderful, like rip Harper Lee's masterpiece away from her, but who cares? This is imaginary.
Flannery O'Connor's short stories.
Great.
I'm just putting
Harper Lee's a good one.
I hope I'm not mistake that
In
for
Cold Blood by Truman Capote. And The Secret History by Donna Tartt, to go a little more current, meaning 10 years ago.
Very
as
topical.
To 80 years
Very
ago.
Topical. Okay, next one is going to be, I got to go with my classic, three foods that you have access to with zero health ramifications whatsoever. Could be something very specific, like there's this place
in
New York.
To fill
I don't
me
have
in.
To go any further.
Nachos, great. Fried chicken.
Amazing.
And spicy tuna with crispy rice.
Oh, great.
That's all my last meal. I almost wish I were on death row.
I just want to let that sit out there for a second.
Do you ever think, like, when you read about people's last meals on death row, I'm always like, I'm sure it's just like the cook from the prison cooking. It can't be that good.
And also,
if I asked for spicy tuna with crispy rice,
yeah,
I bet it would just be like tuna from a can.
Yeah, that's their version. It's grim. And I do think to myself, like, anxiety and depression are appetite killers in such a huge way. Like, yes. Would it even taste like anything?
I would probably go out.
You're so out of your body by then.
Yeah, I would go out in the martyr way and just say, give my last meal to someone who really needs it.
Yeah.
Except for one piece of fried chicken, please.
I mean, I got to work up my strength. So grim. So grim. But yeah. Well, listen, this is a great list. God, I forgot how much I love nachos. Good point. Really solid point. We've talked about feminism. This is the thing I'm harping on. Yes. Great point about nachos, Sarah. Very in-depth conversation.
Nachoism.
How about, okay, so let's do three skills that you wake up with tomorrow that you are wonderful at.
How to play, I know how to play boogie woogie piano. Great. Like Professor Longhair. I could just, you know, clomp it out on any old piano in in anybody's house. Singing, not so much, because I think that you can hold people hostage with your, you know, singing.
Apparently, maybe just one more,
yeah, like
everyone.
Judy Garland used to do that. Yeah. She'd go to parties and everyone would say, Judy, sing a song. And 4 hours later, people are like, can I go? Can I go? I would like to know how to sew beautiful clothes. Mm-hmm. And I would like to know how to surf really well and swim better and swim faster than sharks.
Mm-hmm. Surfing and swimming, outdoing sharks.
Shark
very
radar.
Important.
Does
shark
that count? That's an imaginary. Radar.
This is a general. I'm just going to do a general. I mean, basically, I'm making you Aqua Woman. Okay. Shark radar, great.
Shark dar.
Shark dar. Okay, now listen. Nobody's a bigger fan of your husband than I am. But this is MASH. Standard MASH rules. A romantic, some sort of romantic companion or a one-nighter or alternate universe husband, however you want to think of it. Three. Could be living or dead. Could be young version of someone who's still around.
Okay. It's funny. Somebody just asked me this and I said, I don't really have... What is it called? Like the pass list or
the
whatever?
List,
the
right.
list you get a pass on. But I will say Michael Fassbender, Mark Ruffalo, just because I really am impressed by their talent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Their talent. And let me think of who else. Oh, the guy who played Vronsky in Anna Karenina.
Oh.
What's his name? Taylor Jones. Aaron Taylor Jones.
I'm just going to have to put Vronsky because I haven't
seen
that.
He's just gorgeous. He's not my type at all. He's sort of like too pretty.
Yeah, I don't go for the too pretty either.
But, you know.
Then I did it for you in that movie.
Sure.
That's it. I knocked out three. Okay. Unless you want to do a swip swap. okay. Next one would be three. What do I want to do for you, Sarah? Three. You know what? Three, like, sort of. It could either be a fictional character or it could be someone from history that's like your buddy, you know, just somebody that you can call up and say, like, what's up, Oscar Wilde or whatever.
I think being, can it be someone alive?
Absolutely.
I think being friends with Gloria Steinem would make you
sure.
feel good. Like you could call her and she would just calmly talk you down from whatever.
Yeah. Like whatever you're thinking, she's already thought it and she's got the answer.
You could openly like call her and say, because we never really say this to our friends. We might say I feel fat or something, but we never just say, I'm ugly. You could probably do that with Gloria Steinem.
I think you're right.
Yes, Gloria Steinem, probably Flannery O'Connor. Because I'd like to talk to her about peacocks. I'm kind of obsessed with peacocks.
Interesting.
And I'd love to
have you gone
some.
Up to Arcadia where they just wander people's neighborhoods?
Yeah. I love them. I don't think they're very pleasant birds either.
I don't think they are either.
And they do that weird, like that really annoying call. But I would still just like to have them. It's a total vanity project. I don't have any room for them either. But let's see. And then... I would actually, because I saw the biography of Maria von Trapp that, you know, Julie Andrews plays in Sound of Music.
Sure.
Apparently, she was just a bitch.
Oh,
she was horrible to those kids. She would never let them out. She made them work constantly because that was her ethic.
Right.
Talk about, you know, passing on your own issues. that was her ethic. And they used to try, like, Liesl really did have to sneak out and get away from, I think this was after they'd moved to Vermont and opened their ski resort. I hope I'm not, you can't, what do you call, you can't libel the dead.
Be sued
right?
for defamation.
Dead.
Yeah,
yeah, she's dead now. But I'd like to just observe her casually, see what she was really like, and was she so saintly after all?
I think that's great. I don't think that's a misuse of this wish at all. I'm very excited about it. Okay, final one will be three. I think I'm going to, interesting. What about three things that you could do with your family tomorrow that wouldn't involve like the flying to get there, the, you know, where are we going to stay, the sort of planning? It all just sort of magically happens, like Mary Poppins jumping into a chalk drawing with penguins.
Well, one of them, this is kind of boring because we're actually doing it. I'm taking my daughter doesn't have school tomorrow and I'm taking her to Disneyland. So we're actually doing that. Does that count or is that too boring?
It's not boring.
No, if we didn't have to fly.
Like, yeah. There's just stuff that you could like suddenly you guys like there's no stress to whatever this trip is. So whether you're, you know, suddenly in Tokyo or you're
I'd love to go to Venice because it's so beautiful and creepy in the wintertime. Had you ever seen that movie? Don't Look Back. That movie with Donald Sutherland. And
yes, and I know exactly
Julie
what
Christie.
You're talking about. There's just a lot of haunting, shadowy. Yeah.
That's Venice. In the wintertime.
It's just like, yeah, dark Venice
freezing.
Lurking in the shadows.
I've never been that cold in my life, actually, and I've been to Chicago in the wintertime.
Yeah.
This was even worse because it's so damp. I'd go to Venice. I'd go to Japan.
Yeah, right?
I'd go see the cherry blossoms in Japan. And let's see, where else have I always wanted to go? And I probably go to, God, I just love Italy and Greece so much. They're my favorites. I think I'd
Nothing
go visit relatives
that.
In Sweden.
Oh,
I've
fun.
Never met before.
Oh, fun.
So
yeah.
part of the fantasy is
the
that there's
time.
No weirdness. Like,
yeah, absolutely. That completely makes sense to me that you're immediately just sort of like,
this is great.
Yeah.
And then we're like, we're related somehow. Yeah. My dad went to visit there. My dad is the Swedish side of the family and he went to visit them and he's been sober for years. And he said they all thought he was insane for not drinking.
Yeah. Yeah. So many drinking cultures in Europe for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of the health.
Absolutely.
A little aquavit after dinner.
So what else are you going to do those days where you have 1 hour of sunlight or less?
I don't know. You know, I just read that Denmark is going to go, they're going to try to be totally renewable energy by 2050. And I thought, how will they do that? I guess they must get a lot of wind. Because they don't get a lot of sun, right?
I know. I don't know. How much can they store up? I don't really know. But that's, boy, they really have, yeah. There's a reason everyone talks about the efficiency of Denmark. And it is because they're this small, wealthy country that is progressive. And, you know,
I would go so many places if I didn't have to fly.
Yeah.
I hate flying so much. If we just had like a nice system of pneumatic tubes that shot us all over the world, it would be so great.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go to space. Do people answer that question with space a lot?
Sometimes. I don't want to go to space either.
Nah.
I have a feeling of wild homesick loneliness even when I'm, and I love space movies, but when I actually think to myself, like,
would
could I be that person that? Looking back at the Earth? And I don't know that I would have, I think I would be the person who goes crazy.
Well, I saw an IMAX movie about it once and I almost threw up.
Well, there you go.
So, that's probably not for me.
It's not on the list. All right. Tell me when to stop. Okay. And I'm just going to do some quick calculating. I'm going to put this on pause, come back, and reveal your 100% guaranteed fictional MASH future.
Okay.
Okay. All right. This was, I'm pleased with the results. I think you will be as well. I really have you traveling a lot. It's funny because we talked about you not enjoying flying. So I guess it turned out great that I came up with all of these things that involve you magically being transported somewhere free
pneumatic
of stress.
Pneumatic tubes.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on your vacation shack. Of course, MASH being mansion, apartment, shack, house. You have a vacation shack. It's fitting in Hobbiton. What is it going to be? I mean, that's what they are. They're adorable little Hobbiton shacks.
Right.
Filled with delightful
as long
and delicious.
As it's not just a facade.
It
like
is not a facade.
Okay.
I promise you there are beautifully hewn tables and chairs. and steaming pies and cakes sitting on the tables.
Delicious.
I also want to congratulate you on the recent trip you took to San Francisco where you roller skated your heart away. I mean, that would be really fun.
That's the closest to reality, too. That I know. Could happen.
You could zip all around. Nothing bad's going to happen to you. No helmet required. I want to wish you a beautiful journey to Venice, Italy with a family in the winter. Your creepy winter trip to Venice. Yes. That your children will be scarred for life from because it's creepy and cold.
And they'll complain the whole time.
They'll complain the whole time. I want to, you know what might cheer them up is if you pop into a piano bar somewhere and just boogie woogie the hell out of them. Just sit down and let her rip. Yeah. Very lively. It's a very
and
lively
form of music. And they didn't
know
I could do that.
That's right.
It's out of the blue.
That's right. It'll be a real sort of who is this person moment.
And Europeans love that kind of American, you know, jazz funk music.
Oh, yeah.
So my kids will be like mortified at first. Yes. But then when they notice all the Europeans like gathering around.
She's pretty cool.
Clapping out of tune.
She's pretty damn cool. I also want, certainly do not worry, you do have access to all the nachos. You can eat at any time with zero health
ramifications. Italian nachos.
Italian nachos. And then not to be outdone, although you are very, very close friends with Gloria Steinem, she's probably impressed that you wrote Secret History.
Oh,
so little extra.
Well, that is about murdering someone.
well, people are fascinated by that, as anyone who listened to my last podcast episode knows I am obsessed with the Serial podcast. and then that just leaves us with your your love affair with none other than the guy who plays Bronski.
Really?
Yeah.
The guy who plays Bronski.
You got
awesome.
The most surprising one.
Well, you know what? Them. It's okay, because if we had a kid together by mistake, even though I don't believe in getting semen in your vagina, if we did, if he accidentally didn't pull out fast enough, it could pass for my husband's kids because he's got blonde hair and blue eyes.
Well, there you
like
go. You're going to be all right.
So we're safe.
Good thinking. Oh,
always
God,
choose
what a
lover that looks like your husband, ladies. Then if you have a bastard with him.
Oh, that's amazing advice. Sarah, thank you so much for doing the podcast. I've been wanting to have you on forever, so this was such a joy.
It was
so
fun.
I feel certain that people will want to be able to access more of you and more of your work. Where can they do that and how?
Well, first off, I do a podcast with the writer Susan Orlean called Cry Babies.
Guys, you know she did my podcast and it was an amazing episode.
That we do for, it's the new sister network to Earwolf.
Great.
It's called Wolf Pop.
Great.
It's on wolfpop.com. And our podcast is called Cry Babies, and we interview people about the songs, movies, books, works of art, anything
great.
That makes them cry.
Concept.
Yeah. So we've only just released one episode so far with Christopher Guest. And then we have our upcoming episodes. We have Liz Winstead, Nico Case, Steve Agee, Andy Kindler, Weird Al. We're going to record with Susanna Hoffs next week.
How fun.
I know. It's so great. Everyone's saying yes because you know what? Everyone really enjoys crying.
I know. Listen, that's it really is. It's a great
We go to great,
great
lengths to hide it, but it's why I usually go see movies alone, because I like to have the freedom to cry if I want and not feel self-conscious about it.
Me too.
Not have anyone looking, you know, sidelong at me, except for that one creepy guy who will come sit next to you in the movie theater when you're there.
I don't understand
that at all. There's four other people in the theater, but he comes and sits
This
next
woman
to
is here because she's lonely and she wants me to be her sex partner.
What are you watching? It's the like, movie version of what are you reading? What are you watching? What are you watching? Just asking you that the whole time. And then another thing I do is with the writer and just all around awesome, nice guy, Lewis Peitzman. We do a show every third Wednesday of the month at Bar Lubitsch, which is at 7702 Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood. And the show's called Cheaper Than Therapy. We have five or six, we give a diagnosis, like borderline personality disorder, or we had the cast of the Amazon show Transparent on.
Oh,
which,
great.
By the way, did you watch Transparent?
Yes, I have not seen, I think I'm on episode four.
It's so it's good. Well, we had the cast of them on, and the sometimes we'll do a pop culture diagnosis, and sometimes we'll do an actual diagnosis. But that episode we did daddy issues, because Transparent is about Jeffrey Tambor playing a dad who's transitioning into a woman. And we've done OCD and panic attacks.
Oh, I am muscling my way into the show, by the way.
Will you come do it?
I am forcing you. Yeah.
What's your disease?
I mean, I
everything.
Feel like I have so many. I feel like I have so many. But I mean, these guys, I do have a very interesting diagnosis that I got when I was, I think, 19, called depersonalization displacement syndrome.
I think I have have that. It's what I was talking about.
Yeah, it's
about
out-of-body experience.
It's the seeing your life. It made writing a memoir very easy. It's the seeing your life as a movie. There were moments where I realized I wasn't even in the scene of my life. Mm-hmm. I was watching it. Mm-hmm. Like, and that is, that's...
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what depersonalization is?
Yeah, I mean, it can be it can be different things for different people. Mine definitely was, mine was a preoccupation with, like, identity and having no sense of connective thread to my past, like just looking in the mirror and going, I don't know who that is. I don't know why she likes what she likes. I don't know why food feels and tastes like it does. I don't know why limbs work the way they do. I mean, it's just a total deconstruction of like being a human being with a personality.
Isn't that terrifying?
It's really crazy.
How old were you when that used to happen to you? Yesterday?
Late teens. Yeah. Late teens.
Yeah. That's rough.
Yeah.
To just because you have to go through so much bullshit in your late teens anyway,
totally.
And then to add that mental stress on top of it.
Yeah.
That's crazy. On that note, let me promote my cartoon. I also have
a cartoon. Nice to escape, everybody.
Shoot. I just went down the trap door into my next plug. I have a cartoon coming out on Netflix that is a spinoff from the Madagascar movies.
It's called
All Hail King Julian, and it's about the lemurs.
Great.
Which, as we all know, are the most interesting characters and part of the Madagascar movies. And I play two characters on that. And that comes out on Netflix December 19th. So
great.
And I think it has some good adult humor in it as well.
Well, I feel like I either know someone who writes on it, or maybe I don't know, but I have a familiarity with that project, and I remember thinking, like, this is going to be cute and really good. Yeah.
I've read for your cartoon a couple of times.
Oh, yeah?
They always have me come in and read it. The old wise Japanese woman who's 90 and has one clouded over eyeball. Whatever. But I haven't gotten any of the parts yet.
I know who you're talking about. Well, now it's done.
Oh, cartoons are great, aren't they?
I know. I love doing voiceover.
Well, it's just like when I did voices in high school.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes when I'm in a studio doing cartoon voices, I have to not pinch myself. That's too corny.
No, but I completely
And I don't like self-abuse.
Agree.
But no, I feel like, wow,
this is
kind of my dream come true.
Couldn't agree
Always wanted to do cartoon voices.
Couldn't agree
more.
Have you done Rob Paulson's podcast, Talking Tunes? I just did it last night.
Oh, no.
And maybe after I premiere,
I'll do it.
Yeah, you should absolutely do it. I'll tell him because it's a really fun podcast. You talk about everything, but it sort of... It becomes that kind of like, what cartoons did you watch when you were little, and you know, what voices do you like most like doing and stuff like that.
I love
great
them all.
On it, right?
Yes.
Oh, so fun. Okay.
I wish we could live in a cartoon world. I should have put that
I
in my mash
too.
Game.
Well,
damn it.
Next time.
All right.
You can regret that for the rest of your life. You can play that tape.
Yeah.
Play that tape, and then that person's like, "This really
I lost
isn't
my
that
chance
important
forever to eat nachos off of Michael Fassbender's penis in a cartoon world."
Please, Sarah. Penis. Guys, thank you so much. Talk to you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.